Our guest today is Charlo Green. She's calling us from the Bay Area, but you may remember her as the Alaska news anchor who shocked the world by saying, "Fuck it, I quit," right there live on television. She's got a new book out. It's called Fuck It, A Guide to Letting Go and Living Free, talking, of course, about Charlo Green. Charlo, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, Russ.
Well, it's great to have you here, and it's kind of ironic. We've got the title of your book, A Guide to Letting Go and Living Free, and yet you might not be living free. You're facing some pretty severe charges and the possibility of what I saw, over 5 decades in prison. Give our listeners a tale, because they remember you from that that big television blow up, you know, the fuck it, I quit moment. But what happened from there that led to you possibly going to prison?
Well, the fuck it moment kicked off a series of events that I'm both proud and frightened of. Immediately after the fuck it incident that went viral, I put all of my energy and all of that attention toward fighting for legalization in Alaska, which we did successfully pass with 53% of the vote. 3 months later, I opened up the brick and mortar facility for the Alaska Cannabis Club, which was the state's first safe access point for the nearly 2,000 plus registered medical marijuana patients. Mm-hmm. A little background on Alaska's laws: we had medical marijuana legalized in 98, but there was nothing in place until I created the Alaska Cannabis Club as far as resources or networks in order to connect these patients to what they actually needed. So now I am looking at 10 felonies and 4 misdemeanors for creating that space. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that have watched everything play out believe it's a political prosecution. They believe me taking a stand and speaking out so publicly and how I quit my job and all of the attention that it garnered. They want to punish me for that. And so that's why, a year after legalization, those charges were put against me. And now almost 4 years after that, I'm still fighting this same battle. Mm-hmm. I finally have a trial date, which is October 15th. But if I lose at that trial, which is all for legal weed, I could go to jail for 54 years.
Wow.
So that's the terrifying part of it.
So let's make sure that everyone knows, you know, timeline wise and law wise what was happening. So Alaska got medical marijuana passed in 1998, but after that, they never did come up with any sort of dispensary system, right? They were just kind of like, okay, your patients, you can grow, and that was it, right? There was no access, right?
Well, it wasn't even like that. See, even before the medical laws, back in, I believe it was 1974, 1976, the state of Alaska stated or clarified its constitutional right to privacy mm-hmm. in that it included your right as an Alaskan adult to grow up to 24 plants and possess up to 4 ounces. So that's been a recognized part of the Alaska state constitution since the mid-70s. What the voters did in the late 90s, in 1998, was say, all right, well, we understand we have that right protected, but when it comes to patients, they can't. I mean, you've probably tried to grow a plant or two. Mm-hmm. I've definitely tried. And that isn't something that I would expect someone that's fighting tooth and nail every single day for their life to be able to also take on themselves. So the people of Alaska saw the medicinal value in the plant and said, let's create a system, a medical marijuana system, like we see they're doing in California, to get these patients access to the medicine they need. So the voters show up and do their part, the activists show up and do their part, but the state doesn't do anything further with it. Mm. So they leave the patients in a catch-22 of sorts, where you have to find a doctor first off. It's not a friendly state to do that. So you are counting on one of these doctors that might fly in once or twice a quarter and charge $300-$400. And that's not even including the actual registration. That's just to sit down with a doctor. And then once you get that, you pay the state as well. And then you're on a registry, and that's it.
Yeah.
There's nothing to do with that card. You already were constitutionally protected to be able to grow and possess cannabis. But for the patients, the law meant nothing. It was kind of a slap in the face for everyone that put in the work to go through the legislative process to try and advance this issue for the people that really needed it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Here we are a decade and a half later. It's 2014, and Alaskans now have the opportunity to vote to legalize recreational marijuana, which I saw as the opportunity to finally make medical marijuana real, finally create a system where these people would be able to safely get access to life-saving medicine.
But the state at no time throughout this had ever approached the commercial aspect. They'd never regulated or licensed any sort of shop or any sort of caregiver system or collective or co-op or anything. It was just, you're a patient, you've got a constitutional right to grow privately, now you've got a right to have someone else grow for you, but as far as walking in somewhere and actually buying some medicine, there was nothing. Nobody could do anything.
No, there was absolutely nothing, but there was something in the law that stated the right for people to share. So to be able to share the medicine without remuneration. So that was kind of our caregiver system.
Mm-hmm.
That was written into the law, but no, there was nothing like what you saw spring out in California, like the day after was legalized. You saw these collectives and you saw these groups coming together to read the law as it was and go ahead and do what they needed to do, because they understood if they didn't take it upon themselves to go ahead and say, all right, well, this is how I interpret this, this is the law that is in place on the books, then their lawmakers would have just left this issue dangling above the heads of the people that needed it, like in Alaska. So, no, we didn't have anyone stand up and say, well, this is the law we passed. I read it myself right here in black and white, and it says this is what we have the right to. No, nobody did that.
Mm.
It was just kind of like everyone sat around waiting for someone to make a move, and I guess I was the first one with the Alaska Cannabis Club.
Yeah, and all the more tragic when you consider the vast expanse of Alaska, the rural nature of the state, and people having to fly or take a sled dog or a snowmobile to get to a doctor or any sort of population center. So
right.
The Alaska Cannabis Club opens 3 months after the 2014 vote to legalize. Is that correct?
The brick and mortar facility opened the day of the new law kicked in, which was February 24th.
Right.
Correct.
So you've got all of this time hanging over your head, this trial coming up, a possibility of over 50 years in prison. I know it's got to weigh heavily on you because, I mean, like as an activist, we want to fight the power. We want to prove what's right. We want to believe that, you know, a jury of our peers would see it our way. But, you know, on the practical side, you got to think, geez, 50 years, that's like almost a life sentence in a certain way. So, I mean, where's your head at on this? How are you feeling about this? How does this weigh on you?
I'm scared. I'll be honest about that part.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy that the whole situation has gotten to this point and that the state has already put so many resources toward this prosecution. So for me, it's like down is up and up is down, and I don't know how to prepare for what might come my way because none of it seems logical and none of it seems to make sense. So the fact that I've had this uncertainty hanging over my head for the last few years, it's depressing. I have a history of depression, so I have to watch myself and make sure that I don't slip to a point where I don't even feel like fighting for myself anymore. It sucks. It wears down on you. You find yourself in situations considering things that you never thought you would have, like the plea deal they offered me, which was a 5-year term. When you're looking at 54, something like 5 years for something that I know I don't deserve is something that you find yourself considering. And I think that's part of the process. It's by design that you end up where your spirit is nearly so broken that you just want so little, or it seems like all you want is just the basics that everyone else is just given or guaranteed at birth, you know? Freedom, liberty, pursuit of happiness, all that stuff is now in question for me. Now that's what I'm fighting for.
Yeah. And it's all that more remarkable in that if this is a political prosecution, if this is about teaching someone a lesson or sending a message, who would they be sending it to now that Alaska has legal commercial cannabis? I mean, who is there to be sending a message to?
People that want to see change. Anyone else that might think about challenging the status quo. Another person of color that knows that they have rights beyond what their society acts like they are giving them. I think it's anyone that falls into one of those groups. That's who they might be trying to send a message to, is don't challenge the system. Not when you look like her.
I was going to say, how much can we attribute to, I mean, if it's a straight white male like me running this same sort of situation, do I face the same level of prosecution or the amount of effort they're going to be putting into this? And it sounds as if you believe that might be a factor or is a factor in this prosecution.
Well, I can say this. The way I found out that I was facing these charges is I got a phone call from a journalist who was just contacted by the state about the charges. Before the state contacted me and let me know anything about the situation, they contacted the press to announce everything. So if that is how they do things for the peace and security and dignity of the citizens of Alaska, then unique. That's not something that I've seen as a journalist myself. Mm-hmm. So I say that to say that should kind of paint a picture of what it is that they're trying to do with this. Mm-hmm. It's different. It's not what the system was. Well, maybe it is what the system was designed to do.
Could very well be. And also, I would think that the manner in which you brought attention to it, the virality, like in that if you had been running Alaska Cannabis Club and it was a story that stayed in Anchorage, so what? Mm-hmm. But when it's making USA Today and going across the pond into England and everybody's being focusing all this attention on little old Anchorage, there's somebody we gotta slap back on that, you think?
Yeah, I think that's definitely it. And then again, my appearance on top of it, a lot of people have spoken directly. Well, I won't say directly to me. No one has ever said anything negative directly to my actual face. But online, people in the Alaskan community have said that they don't want someone that looks like me representing the state of Alaska, whether it has to do with marijuana or just Alaska. That's something that's come up again and again and again. And like since Trump, those people have only become more vocal and more confident in their ability to say things that they never would have dreamed of saying publicly. So I think all of that factors into it. The fact that they thought they had it in the bag, and they did. Support for the no vote was growing rapidly, which is part of why I felt so motivated to do something to change the conversation or disrupt the conversation that was happening, which was one that was factoring in all of the reefer madness things that you would have thought Google would have just eliminated, but for some reason in Alaska, it didn't. So the fact that they thought they had it in the bag, the fact that they had leaders from both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party fighting for the no vote, and they felt directly slighted in all of the situation, I think all of that stuff factors into my situation now.
So is the fuck it appearance correlated with a rise in the polls? You're saying it was falling, you know, the no vote was going to win, and then you shone the spotlight on it and boom, it starts to change?
Yeah. actually, that's factually what happened. We started off earlier in 2014. There was about 60, high 50% of, or higher 50s percentile of the support in favor of a yes vote. Around the time, maybe a week before the no vote, we were at maybe 47%. And my job, I was working the marijuana beat, so it was my job to report on these numbers every single week. So I was the one person that knew exactly the direction this was all going. And from fuck it on, we turned 47% into 53% in a matter of about 6 weeks. And nothing else changed. The Yes campaign didn't start suddenly putting a bunch of money toward commercials or anything. Absolutely nothing changed except for fuck it. So yes, that I would say, yeah, that definitely affected the outcome of the vote.
Charlo Green is the author of Fuck It, A Guide to Letting Go and Living Free. She will be on tour this summer, book tour starting on July 17th in Denver, Colorado. Other dates will be listed as they are determined up there on her website at charlogreen.com. That's charlogreene.com. Charlo Green, thank you for joining us, and stick with us. We're going to take a break, and in hour two, we'll have more with Charlo Green talking about her book tour, talking about growing up as a first-generation Nigerian-American in small-town Alaska, and a little secret, a surprise you may not know about Charlo Green. That's coming up in hour two's Toker Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. I'm Russ Belville. This has been the Reformer's Reader.